Welcome to the Victory Podcast.
Hey, Victors, welcome to this episode of the Victory Show. If this is the first time you're joining us, I'm Travis Cody, best-selling author of 16 books, and I've had the privilege of helping hundreds of business consultants, founders, and entrepreneurs write and publish their own best-selling books. In that journey, I've discovered a really fascinating pattern. Most businesses hit a revenue plateau, and they struggle to break through it, usually around $1 million per year. So on this show, I sit down with some of the world's most successful CEOs, leaders, and business owners to uncover the strategies they use to overcome those plateaus and scale their business to new heights. And more importantly, how you can do the same. So get ready for some deep insights and actionable takeaways that you can implement in your life and your business today. My guest today is Dr. Scott Pless. He's a pioneering visionary known as the father of veterinary holographic imaging. At the forefront of innovation, Dr. Pless is transforming veterinary medicine with groundbreaking technology that redefines how we understand and diagnose animal health. Leading the charge at Centerpoint Biotech, his work merges advanced imaging with veterinary science, offering unprecedented insights into animal anatomy and care. His revolutionary approach not only enhances diagnostic accuracy, but also paves the way for more effective treatments and better outcomes for our animal companions. His visionary leadership and cutting-edge research are setting new standards in veterinary medicine, inspiring the next generation of veterinarians and biotech innovators. So today, we have the privilege of diving into his remarkable journey, his trailblazing work, and the future of veterinary medicine. Scott, thanks for being here.
Yeah.
So excited for our conversation today. When someone thinks of veterinaries and biotech usually don't come together. Usually you hear biotech are like trying to do some sort of a breakthrough thing with human medicine or human health. So let's talk a little bit about your journey. Like how did you get to where you are? Let's go back to the very beginning.
Yeah. So again, thanks for having me. The path of the animal healer is kind of what I call it. And it's a difficult road. It really is. Everyone says they want to become a vet, but once you actually, you know, get into the animal hospital for the first time, you see a lot of death, you see a lot of sadness. And frankly, what I saw was a big technologic gap. So we get a lot of hand-me-down things from human medicine and people tend to, you know, look down on the veterinarian, but really, in my opinion, you know, the veterinarian has to be a specialist in everything. Like, no matter what comes in the door, you are that animal's hope in a lot of cases. So it is life or death. I was inventing diagnostics for myself to become a better doctor because I felt like the tools, like the stethoscope, the needle, the microscope were all insufficient and outdated, hundreds of years old. And I've been doing that ever since middle school and throughout high school. It was all going to be for all my inventions were going to be for myself and my own hospital of why they would come to me instead of the guy across the street. But now I'm taking them, you know, with my parent company's help, taking them nationally and internationally.
So yeah. I find this fascinating because this all started off for you with your own tragedy, right? You said you had a dog when you were 5 years old that.
Yeah. What made me want to become a veterinarian in the beginning was my dog died on the first day of kindergarten. And ever since then, I knew I was going to become a veterinarian. And my love for technology and trying to help the animals and you know, figure out, because they can't tell you when they're in pain. So that's why we need better diagnostics than human medicine.
So when you were in middle school, then you actually started going to animal hospitals and you were like, what did you just show up and say, hey, can I follow you around?
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly how it went. I would do that everywhere. I think it's been about 10 years in a day practice, just general practice in surgery and, you know, following around the vets. I spent about 8 years in emergency medicine, which is horrible.
I didn't even know there was so emergency medicine for animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So at a young age, then, what were some of the things that started popping out to you, like even at that age in middle school and in high school, being an observer of all this going on?
It's really just that it's, veterinary medicine really is 20 years behind. Like they're using technology from the 90s, like still today. Most vets don't, you know, you have to be trained on, you're not just trained on a dog and a cat, right? Like a human doctor is trained on one species. We are trained on all of them. So whatever comes in the door, you're responsible for it. So it's just like the wide range of knowledge that a veterinarian has is so, you know, so vast. It's really daunting.
You said something interesting that I just never thought of as a human, which is, you know, in human medicine, right? They specialize, you know, there's the surgeon, but not just a surgeon. There's like, you know, there's one
ears, nose, and throat.
Yes. Just do hearts. I just do ankles or feet.
Right? You can't do that in vet.
Yeah. I was going to say, then when it comes to disease, like I only am this type of cancer, and as a vet, you're like, you got to know diabetes and all 500 everything. Types of cancer and epilepsy. And that never occurred to me before that you guys needed to know that scope of knowledge. What leads, so having observed this as a young kid and been there, and then now obviously, you know, you went to school for all of this, is it a mentality inside of the academic world for veterinary care that is leading to the technology being sort of so far behind? Is it kind of one of those, like, this is just the way it's done?
It is, absolutely. This is the way we do it. You know, there's an older generation of veterinarians that are kind of on their way out, and these are the owners of the practices. You know, the owner typically decides, you know, you're using the 30-year-old X-ray over here, and nowadays the corporate, like all the new grads are really, you know, laden with debt. I am personally, and these corporate groups are buying up all these animal hospitals, but the newer vet generation, you know, we're trying to push AI and 3D into the animal hospitals. And I think that we will get that adoption, but yeah, these older vets definitely have to age out.
And was it because that technology is expensive, or again, just
no,
because
in a lot of cases it's cheaper, like, to be honest, you know, a CT and MRI, a CT scan costs, you know, several over $1,000 nowadays for even an animal. And we don't have insurance in a lot of cases. Like, it doesn't work like human medicine, but it's still the same cost. Like, it costs me $500,000 to buy a CT scanner, just like it costs a human, you know, hospital. But I'm coming up with, you know, inventions that have that in mind, that are cost effective and, you know, are more versatile than an X-ray, but, you know, a fraction of the cost, so that we can use it as a screening tool to help veterinarians. With AI, of course.
When did your first piece of tech, when did you start working on it?
Yeah, I mean, I was right in high school, really. Like, I made the business plan for a mobile veterinary clinic, because I was like, there's no way I'm ever going to afford a $3 million building. So I was, the first one that I came up with was the replacement for the stethoscope, because what I noticed was it didn't matter. You would come in and the owner wouldn't even believe what a heart murmur, like, that exists. It's like this mythological thing, like, oh yeah, my last vet said there was a heart murmur. You don't hear one, like, was there even one to begin with? But heart disease is like the number one killer of, like, animals and humans, like above cancer. So
I had no idea that animals were dying of heart disease.
Yeah. It's especially with dogs and cats in particular. So we need, and I think it's the stethoscope. I think that we need better diagnostics to catch it earlier than you can hear it. And how I'm doing that is I actually fed heartbeats through a software designed for diagnosing problems with airplane engines. And that was my first invention. And whenever I did that, it rendered the heart murmur in 3D and in color. And I was like, oh my God, I can see it. I don't even need to listen to it anymore. Right. So then I showed these three heartbeats, like one normal, one kind of bad, and then one where they, like, died from heart failure, like literally 15 minutes later. And I showed this to, like, a child, and I said, hey, can you point out which one's normal and which one's bad? They could see it. Like, if a child can read it, veterinarians don't even agree on this. How the heck am I supposed to know? How's your normal veterinarian, how's the pet owner supposed to believe you?
How did your brain even go, maybe if I use this software for airline engines, I could use it for, was it just an insight in the shower that you went, hey?
No. Like, the rattling on, I travel, like, a lot for, like, I went to South Africa for a bit for, like, a study abroad, and we would travel and take trips and stuff. And I was like, you know, whenever there's, like, a problem with an airplane, like, it's like a $300 million piece of machinery. So even the little rattling or like some kind of small hum from the engine, like they have extreme diagnostic capabilities in terms of software to catch that stuff. And I was like, why not just feed a heartbeat through there, you know, like, and then layer AI on top of it so that you can actually see, it's kind of like, if I had to describe it, it's like a mountain chain, and the more violent, it's not the peak, it's the turbulence that we're looking at, the sides of the mountain chain. If they're steep, that's actually good. But if they're jagged, you know, that's how you can see the murmur. And I want to show people rather than tell them, because they don't believe it a lot of times, and they don't pay for treatment.
Yeah. And so, like, so if I come in and I've got a cat and I bring my cat in and say, hey, I just want to check her heart, we can do that. And if we do it early enough, then, like, how do we treat? Do you just treat it like
Yeah.
any
So
medication, diet?
absolutely. So, like, catching it is the biggest thing. We need to catch it early, and before it's too late, because a lot of times we catch it when the animal collapses, or their heart is like giving out essentially, because they can't tell us. They can't tell us that something's wrong. So we need to catch it. What we can do, especially with my device, is we can compare it. So, like, let's say we catch it. You hear it and you're like, oh my God, I found a heart murmur. Now the next step is, okay, we need to start them on heart medication. So there's a regimen of three. It's the same as humans. So because of that, it's very expensive. And it's like, okay, is this helping? Or like, is this helping, or is it getting worse? Currently, there's no way to tell that unless you send them for an echocardiogram, like an ultrasound, but that costs $1,000, and nobody can do that except for a radiologist. So what my thing does is, if you listen to it, and it's just like a puck. We call it the Omnipuck. It's like think of a hockey puck with a screen on it that can listen to the heart and take an ECG. So it can compare every time that you use it to the last time. So you could say, 6 months from now, okay, they've been on heart medication. Is it helping? And by how much? Is it 10% better, or is it 30% worse, and we need to raise the dose? Currently, nobody knows, not even for human medicine. So my patent actually covers human and veterinary.
Wow. So how old were you then when you filed that patent for that device?
Well, I wrote it many years ago, but I didn't have enough money to
Do
file
the
it
patent.
until recently. So I think we had it like last year. We have like six
So
patent pendings.
when you were going through your medical training, were you sitting in classes just thinking, oh my God, this is so archaic, and this is so
Oh yeah.
archaic? And were you in class thinking, like, how can I make this process better?
Yeah, I was like, there's another side story to that is, I self-diagnosed myself with cancer while I was in vet school. I kid you not, during my oncology section, I was like, oh my God, wait a second, like, do I have cancer? Like, I have, like, all my symptoms were kind of matching up with like a kind of a like a metastatic carcinoma. And I was like, I went to the doctor and I was like, I need an ultrasound, and I need you to FNA one of my lymph nodes because I believe I have cancer. I might just be being paranoid because I just had my oncology section, but I actually diagnosed myself. It turns out I did have cancer. I had two surgeries the next week, and I had the same doctor as Lance Armstrong. We talked, and we still kind of talk. But after that whole situation, and I almost failed out of vet school because you're right, like, I didn't care about the current standard. I actually invented a new way to find cancer in animals, and that patent also goes to human medicine. So when a problem occurs, I like to invent something or try to that could have stopped it or caught it earlier for very cheap.
So was the original goal for you to go through school and then start your own hospital?
Yes.
And so when did it change from going, I'm going to do a hospital, into let me go into biotech and, like, spread this to everybody I can?
Yeah, I was always going to do tech to set my hospital apart and use the hospital revenue to fund that R&D, but I was going to keep it internally, and just create additional hospitals maybe. But whenever I met my mentor, his name is Tim Baum, founder and CEO of Microvet Diagnostics and CenterPoint Biotech, who's my parent company now. He told me we could do this for every animal hospital, and we could do it internationally, and one day we could take your stuff to human medicine. It was really Tim, and like he's been great. Like, I just don't have the money or the business acumen I'm the inventor, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm not the businessman.
Yeah.
I'm a horrible salesman, and I also, I mean, I did bad, and my grades were bad because I was thinking about how I could invent all these things all the
You know,
time.
what's interesting is a lot of people think that Thomas Edison was a great inventor. And when you really study it, like, he did invent some stuff, but he was a fantastic salesman. And he got to the point where then he just started hiring other inventors because he could sell the stuff. So that's really, let's talk about the device that detects cancer. How does that work?
Sure. So this device in particular, we have about seven or eight, so I don't want to get into all of them, but all of my devices use holograms. That's why it's called HoloHealth. And
Every device uses hologram.
every single device, we're taking information in a diagnostic fashion, non-invasive, and we are in a lot of ways imaging because I'm very visual, and we're turning it into 3D. We actually have a 3D projector too, by the way, to show it. Yeah, it's like sits on a table. It's like the holodeck. It's really cool. Yeah, it's not an illusion.
Where's the prototype? I want to come see this thing.
I can show you, but we need an NDA. Anyways, the cancer one is a 3D thermal imaging system where we can catch cancer earlier than ever before. We can give you that percentage change over time. We can use it for a lot of other things too. I was the first veterinarian to use thermal imaging in a surgery. And we caught like the colic, like how much of the intestine do you remove? You know, people are just guessing. If you remove too much, the horse will die. If you remove too little, the horse will die. With dogs, finding foreign bodies, like when they eat a sock, like in this one case I was thinking about, the dog ate a sock. As soon as we opened up the abdomen, I was like, there it is. I can see it right away. Another case was a vet who's been practicing for 40 years, sent an animal to me on emergency. I was a student. And they said, oh, it has allergies because a little bit of blood is coming out of the nose. I was like, I don't think so. I think this is cancer. But instead of sending it for an X-ray or CT, I just scanned it with my thermal. And I was like, half of its face is lighting up like a Christmas tree. This thing has a tumor in its face. And I was right. And I saved them. This was a misdiagnosis. I saved them like thousands of dollars. I think I saved the animal's life. And it led to a new invention.
Wow. Wow. All right. So where did the holographic imaging come into play with all of this?
Yes. Okay. I can tell you, back in 2012, I've been following a guy in Tokyo, Japan. His name is Takashi Yoshinaga. And this guy is a human, like a researcher for human medicine, cardiology, like holo cardiology. And I've just been learning everything I can from him and, you know, just trying to do it, but in a veterinary sense, as much as I possibly can. So I credit him with me learning that.
So when you started working your devices then, was that like, the idea was I'm using the device to scan it, and then I'm using holographic imagery then to actually see the complete animal to be able to spot it.
Yeah, it's not always the animal. Like there is my product called like HoloVet, where we do take a hologram of the entire animal, like a horse running or a dog limping.
You can take a hologram of the horse running?
Yeah, I did. I did over Christmas, actually. I just gave a presentation about it. And we can take a thermal hologram of the entire horse. We can take a hologram of a procedure, like a surgery, for teaching purposes. And we can even take a hologram of the entire hospital at one time. And I can put this on the table in front of you, and you can see all the people and all the dogs inside. So this is not new technology. This exists today. And I'm trying to get in the hospital floor. There's a hospital right outside, and not in this research loop where if something goes into research with a university, it stays there for 10 years. Nobody reads the paper and it dies.
Yeah.
I'm trying to skip that step. Research is important, but we need to get it in the hands of the veterinarian and help them, because millions of animals are dying. If they had these low cost 3D AI solutions, people are willing to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the academic research system, it's a business in and of itself. It's an industry, billions of dollars of industry. So I'm Columbia, you know, I'm getting $400 million a year in medical research grants. Like if I bring something out of that, I'm going to lose that grant money. So there's no incentive for them to actually get any of this stuff out.
Yeah. Now in undergrad, I did I was in the research sphere where I did a little bit of human breast cancer and prostate cancer research, but I learned that very quickly that the numbers, you know, the bad numbers get pushed away, and, you know, it's all about getting the grant money. I hated it. Still, I love teaching students because I want to share my knowledge. I don't want to lock it away in a safe. That's why I'm talking to you about this. But I think that that's the university system, as far as the research side, is kind of an economy in itself. That's it's a little weird.
I guess right now, and I want to talk about it because you've got your school, you've got this intelligence, and you're doing this technology and you're inventing it, but you've also got, you know, HoloHealth, and you've got employees and you've got team members that you're working. So how do you juggle like all of this going on of like being able to invent and then also leading a team and a business that's obviously got to make a profit?
Yeah. Well, I mean, my personal life is an absolute wreck. I don't have my own pets. Like everybody asks, it's like everyone else's pet is my pet. You know, like that's how I view it. It's definitely cost me in money. Like I'm in debt from vet school still. I'm going to pay that off. But first, we need to invent these things and get them out there. You know, I've lost my fiance along the way. I've lost so much. So I've sacrificed so much to get to where I am. I almost failed vet school, like flat out a couple times.
Because you were focused on inventing stuff?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. People have called me crazy. I've been sent like at least, I think it's 4 cease and desists by veterinarians who saw me doing this stuff, trying to film things and whatnot. And they just didn't want, they wanted to hurt me. As a student, I got these cease and desists. But
for what? For filming procedures?
It's it was a competitive thing. Like they knew I wanted to start a hospital. They're trying to stop me. Like they just wanted to, I was
so
helping.
Much for people wanting to help, right?
Yeah.
For the greater good.
I spent a little tidbit is in vet school. I threw all of my money into Bitcoin. It doubled. And then I bought this like thermal camera, which is like the best one you could buy at the time. And I think it still is. It can't leave the country because it could like guide bombs into people. I pointed it. I bought this as a student. It's like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. And I just started using it everywhere. Like I was catching things and discovering things that nobody's ever seen before on human or veterinary medicine. And I just started writing books and you know, this led to extra patents and, you know, it just went from there.
So how many patents do you personally hold right now?
We currently have, just because of funding and, you know, I have a patent attorney team and we've got about 20 on the docket that we're going to complete by and file by the end of this year. So we're doing about 10 to 20 a year. Oh. The total portfolio is about 164
right now.
Yeah, we have six patent pendings filed in the United States, and two or three of those also cover human medicine.
Wow. So what's, I guess, with where you're at with the business right now, like that. So I'm super fascinated by the whole like holodeck table scenario.
Sure.
How like as a how is that going to be show up and be used in the future in veterinary medicine?
Yeah, I would love to show you. Also on the patents too, like. I do patents for fun. My parent company just like said, here, like create our entire like $1 billion patent portfolio. And I was like, this will be easy. Like I would love to. I'm getting approached by other human medical companies who are like, please write our patent portfolio too. So the patent side is very easy because like I can make prototypes and you can show these things. The patents for the holograms and all in the holodeck are happening now. Like those are being filed now.
Sure.
You will see them hit the market in about 4 years, I believe. So
wow.
My product that you're talking about is called VetGlass, and it itself is not really an analyzer. It is used to show the client. Like I'm really big on showing people, and I'm not Samsung, right? Like I'm a software company. So we will use the best holo display that's out there.
Yep.
We're building software on top of it where you can put your CTs, MRIs, and all these other holo things that I'm creating, including your dog before they die. So like onto the holo deck, my dog had cancer, you know, and died very quickly. So I recorded her, and it's really rough. I think that, you know, we see euthanasia so frequently. You ask any vet, there's like 10 euthanasias a day in a hospital. So it's not just medicine. My inventions will also record the animal before they die, and I can give you a hologram of your dog or cat for you know, your hologram could play with your kids or your next pet could play with your previous, and we could use AI to you know, give them kind of a personality. But that's what I'm doing behind the scenes right now.
That's just one of the many things. How is the VetGlass going to show up in terms of the analytics and the diagnosis?
Yeah, VetGlass is a display system. There's going to be like one per hospital. We call it kind of the holo hospital package, where you've got just like you know, animal facial recognition, snoot scan. You've got the holo, like the puck, which is the OmniPuck, makes like a holo ECG, holo murmurs, and all that. You've got holo vet that creates a full hologram of the animal or surgery. Holo temp, which is the tumor finding or the arthritis finding holograms. And you look at all of it on VetGlass.
Wow.
So you don't
so
need,
eventually you'll be able to have a scan of your pet and you can be like, oh, see right here on the kidney.
Yeah exactly. Cool. Yeah. You can move in and show them on, you could show them, oh, here's the tumor before surgery. And then here's the tumor now.
Wow. Like, I mean, that's just, so like my parents had a cat in it. It was in really good health and it got attacked by a coyote. And then over time, you know, the doctor was like, did whatever and sutured some stuff up, but the vet didn't catch that the bite had punctured the intestines. And so then it ended up sealing shut and then, you know, it died a yeah. slow, miserable death. Like we would have had that, the vet could have just gone in and been like, we got to fix this.
Yeah. So yeah. I could have seen that. Actually, if we used my thermal, you know, 3D thing in their surgery, we could have seen that. Unfortunate.
That is remarkable. So I guess, so where do you see like for what's your big goals for the next 5 years? What are like, do you have is there technologies that you can talk about that you know, over the next few years you're going to be releasing and what is the vision of that as it rolls out?
Yeah. I mean, it's all of these things combined. I think that the key, the foundational tech that we're working on now that I have two patent pendings on in the United States is what's called snoot scan. So What I want to do is I want to break down the walls of the hospital, and I want to put the data, and I want to put everything about that animal on the animal's face. So we're turning the face into, like, you see my iPhone here, how I just unlocked it. Yep. It just scanned my face. It made a hologram, a 3D reconstruction of my face with Apple Face ID. We're using that on the new phones. They have the Apple Face ID camera on the front. So dog comes in, you scan them with any iPhone, and you as the consumer can do this too. This is not just for the vet. And it pulls up their entire medical record. It pulls up if they've been vaccinated. It says the owner's name, the address, if they're lost. The medical record is the key though, because then all of these different diagnostics that I'm creating all feed back into the master AI. And now, you know, you could even put money on the pet's face, to be honest. Like if they're lost, they could pay for themselves. If the vet can access, you know, all they have to do is scan the face. So I'm looking at a world where, you know, we don't have computers at the hospital, and you know, we have this AI veterinarian who's like almost living on the face of all the animals, and everything is a hologram. And the reason why is because it doesn't really, like, a human can't really read an MRI, to be honest, effectively, sure, because it's so much information, and I can't read a hologram, you know, effectively. I've struggled. I've taken like so many holograms. It's so hard to line them all up. But whenever ChatGPT came out, like, we just let AI have at it. And now we've got like millions of data points that are all moving, and it can just figure out everything. Like holograms and AI, I mean, AI is the big thing right now, but I'm telling you, like, holograms and then robots are going to be the next thing. And I, you know, we already have a project called SpayBot. So the robot surgeons are coming, but, and they use holograms to see, by the way. So whenever I talk about hologram surgery capture, which, like, what's the point of that? We're compiling a database to train the future robots that are coming down the line right now.
So, all right. So the other question then is, like, let's talk a little bit about what the work you've done with detecting cancer in both pets, and that's human-ackable. How does that device work?
Yeah. So all of the hologram-based, you know, capture is we're taking, I mean, you can use one camera, right? Like,
sure,
you could take one camera, and I can't tell you the exact, like, technique with AI that we're using, but it's in the patents. You could take one camera and then scan a whole bunch of times and then stitch them all together and make a 3D. But the problem is animals move. I don't want to sedate this animal. I want them to move. They love to, you know, move around, do everything. Sometimes they're you know, like, aggressive. Sometimes they don't want to get touched. Sometimes they want to bite you. So all of my stuff needs to work without touching the animal. And then if we have multiple cameras that can all capture at a really high resolution all at the same time in video format, now the AI can stitch it all together and give you, you know, a hologram scan of a surgery, just for your information, is like 300 gigabytes just for one. So we're talking about massive data loads that we're going to push and let an AI read and then tell us what the problems are. Now, we've got a team of AI trainers AI veterinarian trainers that will go and annotate that information. And we have what's called, like, you know, instead of ChatGPT, who just, like, is trained on the entire internet, we're implementing a rules-based order. Like, how do I know, you know, when a crystal is this versus that in the urine? Well, I read the textbook. You know, I kept these in my pocket the entire time I was in practice, and I would look at them all the time. So we're teaching them to read the textbook. We're teaching them to have a rules-based order where we have what's called clinical context. Like, it's not just AI looking at the image. It's AI looking at the image. It's AI creating the hologram. It's AI looking at the entire medical record that's held on their face, and then piecing all that together and saying, over here on your x-ray, the heart is enlarged. So you must have, like, I'm going to influence the outcomes of your blood work now, like a different AI system. We let the analyzers talk to each other. And then we have the master AI, you know, the veterinarian AI above it all, which is called VetBorg, that pieces it all together and then talks to you, the owner. And you can, like, ask it questions and things. It's like a veterinary specific ChatGPT.
So eventually then for future of animal care, like me as a cat owner, I can bring my cat in for the annual thing and we do all the scans, and then eventually we'll have yearly holograms that we would just compare to be like,
absolutely.
And eventually that'll be me. I'll go to my doctor. He'll scan me.
Well, see, human, we can do this in veterinary medicine because we don't have to deal with the FDA. We can share all that information. I can data mine the entire, you know, I can take all of the pet information, and there's no laws preventing me from, like,
sure,
reading
sure.
that.
Yeah.
But with human medicine, you can't do that at all. You have to, like, when I say we're going to, the patents translate to human medicine, the scanners do. But yeah. Whenever I'm talking about this network of AI and like facial stuff, you could never even do like 1% of that without running into HIPAA violation here, there, sure. whatever.
But just the fact that that technology is, will eventually be available, whether or not we're able to use it, that's pretty something.
Yeah. Like the laws need to change, like for robot surgeons, for SpayBot. You know, it will be able to do autonomous spays on its own, simple ones. But, you know, we need the laws to kind of change for that. The technology is moving faster than the laws is kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. We're seeing that on a lot of fronts, right? So if somebody's listening to this episode and they you know, want to get more involved in what you're doing, like, how do they find you? How do they find the things you're working on? How can they follow along as these things advance?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I live in Las Vegas. This is kind of, you know, where a lot of the biotech stuff happens. With my parent company, Centerpoint Biotech, I'm exclusively licensing things to them. We're building a new website, which is called holohealth.com or holo.health, either one. It'll be a hologram interface, and you can see what we're doing there.
Wow, that's awesome. Scott, this has been probably the best conversation I've had in the last couple of weeks. So thank you so much for making time to be out here. I look forward to following this stuff with great interest.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I literally just came from a presentation with my board of directors where we just set out the next 5 years, and I'm not even telling you all the stuff. Like, the stuff I'm telling you about is the things that we have patented. I'm not even sharing the things that are, like, we're currently drafting. And it's going to be wild.
All right. Well, holohealth.com or holo.health. We'll be following along.